Hey everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn movie blog, which can be found at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is your host Jasper. Ghostface Milla is back again, and on this episode, we'll be talking about What's Your Number? A new romantic comedy starring Anna Faris as a single 29-year-old woman who makes a list of... Wait. This is a romantic comedy where the lead character is a single 29-year-old woman. You probably don't need to be given a plot synopsis up front.
You could have had some fun for old time's sake.
No, you know, even if it didn't raise my number, I can't afford to waste any more time on guys like him.
Wait. That's what this is about? You don't want to raise your number. That's why you won't sleep with me. I don't know why girls care so much about the number anyway.
You guys all have this ideal girl in your minds. And if our number gets too high, we can't be that girl.
The ideal girl. Tell me about it.
You know, you can take her home to the family. She's smart, but not smarter than you, and she bakes apple pies with your mom and plays catch with your handicapped sister, but then when you're alone, she takes off her glasses and puts on a vinyl cat suit.
That girl doesn't exist. If she did, I'd be sleeping with her, and what kind of guy cares about how many people you slept with anyway?
Decent guys.
So, Ghostface, I'm not going to pose the obvious intro question by asking you what's your number, because then I feel like I'd have to say what's my number too, and tonight I don't really feel like being slut-shamed. Wait, what's the opposite of slut-shame? Prude-blurg?
Yeah, prude-blurg. Yes, exactly.
It's funny because, as our listeners know, sexuality makes me incredibly uncomfortable, and it's also funny because if you spell it out, prude-blurg looks like something that IKEA manufactures.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, this movie was pretty overt about a lot of things that they discussed, and some of the stuff that they even showed. And I wondered, how is Jasper going to react to this?
Not very well, as it turns out. And actually, let's dive in here by talking about Marie Claire magazine, which is sort of where the movie takes its jumping off point. Anna Faris plays Allie Darling, which is a name that immediately I was like, ugh. Does it ever specify, like, where she works exactly? Like, what kind of agency that is? Is it an advertising agency?
She works in marketing.
She works in marketing, which is, like...
that's as much as we know about her.
That's the go-to career for, I think, every, like, young adult comedy.
Right.
But she's fired from her job in a sequence that doesn't really, like, amount to anything. Her boss is played by Joel McHale, and he's sort of wasted, like I feel like a lot of the people in this movie are. But she's on the subway home from being fired with her box of desk things, and she's looking at an issue of Marie Claire magazine. One of the articles that she stumbles across is sort of alleging that if you have more than 20 sexual partners and you're a female, the less likely you will be to have a successful marriage. And I think what the average for sexual partners, this article says, is 10.5 for females?
Yeah, something like that.
So obviously, this is a huge deal because Allie has had 19 sexual partners at that point. I know romantic comedies are running out of plot gimmicks, but what ensues is sort of like just a great big headache for me, because she has to go through her past 19 sexual partners in order to figure out who she will take with her, you know, to marriage, because she cannot have a 20th sexual partner or the marriage will not work out.
Yeah, I mean, this is really one of those movies where if you don't believe the setup or the premise, like, you will just hate the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, like, you just cannot get over that thing in the beginning, then you're, like, kind of messed up. You know, like, I mean, it reminded me a lot of Runaway Bride or even, like, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Like, it really reminded me of those romantic comedies where, like, they set up this ridiculous thing in the beginning. And you're like, wait, what? And then they're like, no, just go with it. Just go with it. And then, like, the rest of the movie has to rely on that. And so it's kind of, like, limiting, you know, just to, like, if you can't get past the setup.
Yeah, were you able to get past the setup at all?
Yeah, I mean, I knew about it. Like, I read about it before. I didn't think it was through a magazine. I thought, like, I don't know why. I read she went to, like, a psychic or something, and they told her that she already met, like, the man of her dreams or something like that, you know? And so I thought that's why she went back to all her past lovers or something. So, like, the title didn't make sense to me, and, like, none of that stuff made sense to me. But then I finally saw it, and, like, it started. I think the title sequence was all, like, magazine headline articles, yeah. You know, and, like, sexy bedside, you know, Cosmo, Marie Claire looking magazines. And I was kind of like, oh, shit, it's one of these movies. Like, you know, it just seemed very, like, it was trying to be, like, Devil Wears Prada and, like, How to Lose a Guy and, like, all these other romantic comedies without really, like, setting itself apart
Yeah, I feel like if she had actually gone to a psychic, that would have made the movie a little bit easier to swallow, because it would have introduced her character as the kind of person who actually does put faith in what a psychic might tell her. But I don't really know anyone who would pick up an issue of Marie Claire magazine and read any article as gospel. And it sort of immediately made me roll my eyes at her character and not want to go with her on this, you know, magical journey to find her love. It's just... I mean, those magazines, I always see them in checkout lanes and I roll my eyes at the stuff that's on the cover anyway, because it's like things like, you know, 20 great new sex positions. And I always think when I see that, well, haven't they thought of them all already? Like, is there really any new sex position out there that, yeah, that has not been done?
I never even really thought that it was about love, because, like, I just didn't believe the character was really into that much. I thought it was more of, like, she needed to prove to herself and to others that, like, she wasn't a slut. You know, like, she basically had to be like, oh, well, if I've had sex with this many guys, then I probably, like, need to, like, make sure I like the next one for real. You know, and so I kind of thought of it more of that way, and then, but knew that it was going to end up being, you know, a romantic comedy. So it was kind of weird in that way. And that's where it reminded me of Friends with Benefits, because her and, like, Chris Evans, their chemistry was very, like, platonic and, like, sexual tension-y, but also just, like, really funny, you know, quick banter. So it kind of, like, didn't make up its mind between what kind of movie it wanted to be.
I would argue that it's more about that second kind of movie that you're talking about, whereas I think that you could have written it better. I mean, if it was about this woman trying to prove to herself that she's not a slut, there's more opportunity there. And actually, the movie does open a few doors. It just doesn't go through them.
Yeah.
And even the end, the final scene, which I do want to talk about eventually after we set up a lot of the things that happen in this movie, ends with her sort of still slut-shaming herself in a way. Like, the final scene of this movie, I was just like, are you fucking kidding me?
I think it took them, like, an hour to address the fact that, like, men can have a million sexual partners and women can only have, like, 20.
And I don't even know if I would say it addresses it. I would say that it kind of depicts it and then doesn't really have anything to say about it.
Yeah, well, she kind of, like, challenges it, but really just, like, puts it out there, and they both kind of acknowledge it and quickly move on.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing that comes out of it. I mean, really, I thought that's what this movie was building towards, and then it's brought up and sort of, you know, shuffled off to the side. But
right.
Chris Evans, Captain America, plays her across the hall apartment
sexy neighbor.
Who's never dressed, really.
Never.
Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
I thought he was great in this.
You know, I don't know if you're being funny, but I would actually say that he is probably the best thing about this movie.
Yeah, no, I think he's the greatest looking thing in this movie, but I also think he was, like, the best actor. Like, he played this character very convincingly. I think he grounded Anna Faris enough, you know, like, in sort of a normal chemistry sort of way, because she can be sort of, like, over the top.
I would say she can be over the top, but this movie doesn't really give her that many opportunities to do the things that we kind of expect from her. I was looking for an image to put with this Scorn cast, and all the stills that I could find of this movie were pictures of Anna Faris with her mouth wide open.
Yeah.
And we're talking, like, blow-up doll open, like, in every picture. And yeah. All I could think of was, wow, this movie seems so much wackier in still photography than it does in motion.
I think that was one of the problems with it, like, as far as how it was advertised. Because it really seemed like this madcap crazy comedy, you know, that audiences are gonna love. And, like, it was kind of like a raunchy rom-com. Like, not in the raunchy, like, wacky way. It was, like, verbally raunchy.
It was just crude without really being anything other than crude.
But, I mean, I liked the crude humor. I thought it was kind of, like, well done.
What humor are you speaking of?
I think it was one of her friends, maybe, or her sister's friends, that's sort of, like, uppity. I forget the actress's name, but she's also on Bored to Death. One of the girls was like, oh, yeah, we were 69ing. And she's like, oh, please. She's like, you don't do that anymore. You're not in high school when you have to cram everything in before your parents find out or something like that. And I thought that was pretty funny.
I've sort of felt like with those characters of their friends, their circle of friends, I mean, she hangs out with her sister, who's played by Ari Grainer, who is a really, really hilarious actress that is reduced to just sort of sitting around in scenes here. I don't know why you would cast Ari Grainer in a movie and not have her be funny, but I would say, you know, rent Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist or Youth in Revolt if you want to see Ari Grainer Grainer on fire, but she's with her sister a lot, who's Eri Grainer, and they have this like circle of friends who are with them frequently. And the purpose of these friends is just to sort of say, well, you know, well, you've slept with 19 guys, or she ends up sleeping with her boss, Joel McHale, early on in the film. So that's 20. So that's sort of like the impetus for her to go back through all 20, because she doesn't have another, you know, rendezvous to waste. Like, she has to find her marriage partner in these 20 guys. But she hangs out with these girls, and their purpose is sort of just to say that they only slept with 3 guys or 6 guys or whatever, and sort of like, you know, give her the side eye for having slept with so many people. And I'm using finger quotes when I say so many, because I don't give a shit how many people she slept with. But I found it kind of odd that they were as potty mouthed as they were, but also as prudish as they were.
Well, it seemed like, you know, there's a line between, like, what you can talk about and what you can joke about and, like, what you can actually do or something. But I could just be making that up. I mean, my personal experience with my girlfriends is that, like, they say and do whatever they want, but they sure don't always, like, talk about all that stuff personally.
And all of those scenes, I mean, you know, as irritated as I was by them, like most things in this movie, they have a purpose, because, you know, it's sort of like that post-Sex in the City kind of thing where, yeah, where any gathering of female characters in an R-rated comedy, they have to talk about, you know, vaginas a lot. And, you know, I was not a big fan of Sex in the City by any stretch, but I mean, this is like really sub-Sex in the City kind of humor.
I don't know. I didn't mind it.
I did like Eliza Coop, though. I don't know if she's the actress from Bored to Death that you're talking about, because I'm not all caught up on my Bored to Death yet. But she's been in a lot of other things. She guest starred on an episode of Community last season, and she's one of the regular cast members of Happy Endings, which is a show that I'm happy is like finding an audience now. But she's super funny on everything that I've seen her on, and she does manage to get a couple good lines in. And I think she was the woman who was talking about 69ing in this movie.
It's her. She's great.
I guess my main beef with this movie is that it's another romantic comedy that more or less assumes that you agree with its position, that being single in the age range of, let's say, like 25 to 39 is the worst thing in the world. And speaking as an incredibly single person in that age range, which is maybe where some of my irritation with this genre comes from, I admit. But I gotta say that being single is actually pretty great. I can eat as much hummus as I want without anyone giving me stink face when I have to undo my pants before I finish the whole tub. I can spend entire weekends playing video games or watching a full season of some TV show on DVD. And also, I get to devote a lot of time to putting together this podcast, which may or may not qualify as an awesome thing depending on who you are. It's just one of those movies, you just have to go with her on this thing. You have to assume that, yes, this is horrible for her. She's, what is she, 29 in the movie?
Yeah.
And her not being engaged is just really the worst thing in the world.
Well, I mean, it's weird because I feel like, and this is just probably my love for Anna Faris, like, I feel like she's, like, no fault, but I feel like the character didn't care as much, but, like, her friends definitely cared, and her mom, like, really cared, who I thought was played really well by Blythe Danner, because then even at the end, when she talks to her dad, and they're, like, dancing, and her dad is played by Egg Begley Jr., who is always, like, ridiculous, you know, he's kind of like, you're not like her, you're more like me, and, like, we're kind of crazy, and, you know, whatever, like, it was kind of thrown in last minute. I mean, it was weird, she was following it, and she was trying to find out like who her partner was and all that stuff, but I felt like she also didn't super care about everything because she didn't change who she was, you know.
But at the same time, there's still that like whole sense of slut shame that hangs over the movie, I guess.
Yeah.
And I want to be clear, I love Anna Faris, and I think that she's still kind of searching for that vehicle that really takes advantage of everything that she has to offer. And I would say, like, of the movies that she's made so far, you know, I think she's obviously the best thing about most of the scary movies. And if nothing else, I'm glad that the scary movies exist, because we probably would not have Anna Faris without them.
Right.
But I think The House Bunny is probably the movie that, for me, came the closest to really sort of establishing her and giving her really good material to work with. I mean, I don't know, really good is probably a stretch as far as, yeah, The House Bunny goes.
I feel
but...
like that movie didn't do her justice as much as this movie did.
Really?
But I think her best is Smiley Face by far.
I've not seen Smiley Face. I'm so weird about Greg Araki movies.
Yeah, this is one of his like more accessible ones by far.
So not Kaboom.
It's not Kaboom.
As much as I disliked What's Your Number, I would say, you know, there are ways in which it could have been so much worse. And one of those I just thought of just now, can you imagine Katherine Heigl playing this role?
I don't want to ever imagine that. That sounds awful. I kept thinking of who else could play this role. And I mean, I think like a lot of young actresses or women could have played this role, but I don't think anyone would have played it as well or as likable as Anna Faris. She's kind of a bad sister.
She has her priorities in strange places and yeah, is like, generally like not the most likable person in the world up until the end, at which point I was just like, kind of like, look at your life, look at your choices. Right. But she is played by Anna Faris, so she's, you know, she's likable in the way that Anna Faris is, despite exactly. all the problems that I have with this character.
Right, yeah, totally.
This character whose hobby is making
oh, God.
Little tiny sculptures of people on the subway.
I was waiting for you to mention those things. In all these movies, someone has something like that, their sort of like secret dream. And I liked that she was an artist. Like, I thought that was kind of fun. But also, like, I feel like we're scraping the bottom of the barrel for these secret dreams. Like, she makes weird little figurines and he calls them weird little figurines. And then she starts calling them that. And like, it's kind of endearing, but it's also kind of like, what are we talking about here? Like,
yeah, it just seemed to be the most random thing that they could have possibly come up with. Like, it seemed like something out of Garden State.
I mean, I sort of liked that. I sort of liked that it was weird, but like they worked it into the plot. Like he like puts up track lighting to yes. focus on it. And that's like one of his sweet romantic gestures that he does for her.
Yeah, let's talk about that scene.
It was kind of like different than the rest of the movie. I mean, that was when his character started to turn and I was like, this is weird.
It was very strange because their whole deal is that she finds out that he has a Google News alert for everyone in their apartment building who lives there. And through that, she assumes that, you know, he must be really, really good at tracking people down and knowing things about people. And also
she's a moron, apparently. She doesn't know how a computer works.
Yeah, Google News alerts are really easy and I'm not the most computer savvy person in the world. Yeah.
They do expand on his like cunning in that like his whole family is cops or something like that.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking that was so dumb. I was like, do you not know how Google works?
Yeah, she doesn't really have a reputation for playing the brightest characters, I guess. We really need to work on that because I've seen her on enough talk shows and interviews enough to know that there is a brain there.
Right. Yeah.
Somebody just needs to cast her as a smart person. But their arrangement is that he tracks down these 20 guys that she slept with. I guess not counting Joel McHale, her boss, because you know she knows where he is.
Right.
But the other 19 to figure out who she's going to marry. And she lets him stay in her apartment after he has these one-night stands. So there's no awkwardness between him and the women that he sleeps with when they both wake up in the morning. He just, you know, goes over to Anna Faris's apartment.
Yeah.
While she's out and she's visiting all of these people who she slept with before, he's sort of crashing in her apartment. And one day while he's there, I guess, he installs track lighting over all the sculptures that are displayed all over her apartment. And when she comes back from her last, you know, horrible date with one of her exes, she comes home to find all this track lighting installed. And it's played like this moment of like, wait a minute, this guy could be really great as my boyfriend. And I was like, because of track lighting?
But it's nice. He noticed her hobby that no one else even cared about.
I guess so. And then he immediately like plays a song for her on his guitar because he's in a band.
Yeah, that was weird.
That was a really weird scene.
Okay, there were several parts of this movie where, like, it was kind of like the writers were writing, and then they were like, oh, what should we do here? Hey, remember that scene in that other movie? Oh, yeah, that would work. Yeah, let's try that. Because there were several parts where, like, it reminded me of Runaway Bride, where she kept, like, forgetting who she was. You know, like, she would, like, be someone different with a different partner. And like, you know what I mean? There was mm-hmm. just scenes like that. And I feel like this scene was that. I'm trying to think of a movie where the person like plays someone a song on the guitar.
It made me think of Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
And then they go out for this like strange date night that involves them playing strip basketball together, which I mean, you know, I'm not going to complain. I know that there are people out there that really enjoyed that scene.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're implying.
But I do want to call this movie out for its supporting cast, because this is a really great supporting cast. I mean, yeah. I don't think that there's a single actor that I don't like in the bunch. There's Martin Freeman plays one of her exes, Andy Samberg, Zachary Quinto, like a lot of people who I genuinely do like are in this movie. But they're used in really strange ways. Every joke that deals with one of her exes not really being the right ex for her is kind of revealed in the trailer for this movie.
Yeah, exactly. You said it.
Yeah. Andy Samberg is a wacky puppeteer.
Right. Which actually that part was, some of it was cut out.
And yeah. You get a flashback with Andy Samberg and her having sex. I think she loses her virginity to Andy Samberg when she's a teenager, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's really, I did laugh at this sight gag
good, yeah.
where the puppet sort of like just kind of joins them briefly and then backs out.
Yeah, but only to, like, watch her.
Yes.
Like, it's really odd. But that was one of the parts when I was like, this movie is weird, and, like, it's funny weird.
Yeah.
You know? Like, sexually weird.
Like, I would have liked more of that. It seemed like something that would have been in a Lonely Island sketch, honestly.
Totally,
or, like, a Saturday Night Live digital short, but it definitely worked. I mean, I definitely laughed probably the most at the movie in that moment.
There's the part with Chris Pratt where he's, like, disgusting Donald, which is just, like, really offensive to fat people. That is just like, oh, by the way, he was really gross because he ate weird things. Things and,
yeah,
like, he couldn't cook, so he ordered out a lot, and he was gross, like, whatever. But, like, she sees him and he's, like, totally wasted. He's just, like, there. He's, like, a normal guy.
I
was like, he's so funny. He could have been, like, any of those other characters and it would have been better.
Yeah, and anyone who watches Parks and Recreation will tell you that that guy is, like, a comic goldmine.
Yeah,
I mean, he's able to get huge laughs on that show just using, like, a reaction to something. And it's weird, they don't really do anything with him. The bit with Martin Freeman, the whole joke of that is in the trailer. It's just that she faked a British accent when she dated him.
Yeah, and it goes on for way too long.
It does go on for way too long.
They add like one or two accents into the mix. Like, it's more of like, she's British and then she's like Cockney and then what is she after that? Is she Borat or she's...
She goes from like posh British to like Mary Poppins, Van Dyke and Mary Poppins. Yeah, and then it's Borat for some reason.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think in between she was, like, Russian or something.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, that was funny, but, like, you knew what was going to happen. So
yeah.
It was kind of ruined.
And Anthony Mackie from The Hurt Locker is another ex of hers who, the joke there is also ruined in the trailer, that she goes to see him and it looks great. You know, he's attractive. She's attracted to him. They get along really well, but he is gay and he wants her as a beard because he wants a political career, but he's aware that nobody will ever elect a gay man to Congress or president or whatever. But the punchline there is that, like, oh, you're gay? Yeah, I'm really gay. Which, what? Like,
I know.
It just seemed like like all of these really great actors just sort of wasted in this parade of losers.
They were all, like, just really bad stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
And why was she into any of those guys?
Yeah.
Like, literally any of them. And she's, like, a gorgeous, funny woman. It didn't make sense to me that, like, this character had such bad taste and such varied taste. And they tried to explain it when her dad was like, oh, you're just different, you know? Like, you kind of don't know what you want or whatever.
And I guess also we can't really talk about What's Your Number without bringing up Bridesmaids.
Yeah.
Because this movie does have a lot in common with that one. I would say Anna Faris is, you know, subjected to her sister's wedding, made the maid of honor, and she loses her job, which are two things that happen to Kristen Wiig in Bridesmaids. She is, you know, made the maid of honor at her best friend Maya Rudolph's wedding, and she doesn't necessarily lose her job as much as her business just goes kaput because of the economy.
Yeah, but she does lose her other job.
Oh, that's true. She's a jeweler.
She, like, cusses out that teenager.
Yes. And that's the thing. I'm sure a lot of single women who are asked to be maids of honor have that mental crisis, you know, those moments of like, whoa, wait a second, what's my problem? Or wait, do I even have a problem? Or are people judging me because I don't have someone in my life forever, as long as I'm on the right side of that whole 50% divorce rate? But I think the thing that Bridesmaids does that's so much savvier than What's Your Number is, you know, Kristen Wiig didn't grapple with that Marie Claire mentality of, oh, well, you know, I got to find a husband. You know, even though she does end up finding someone who the implication is they're going to be happy together forever, which was one of my admittedly few gripes about that movie. But it was more about the anxiety of her being afraid that her place in Maya Rudolph's life as her best friend would fade after Maya Rudolph's wedding. And actually, even before then, because she meets that other bridesmaid, that Little Miss Perfect character played by Rose Byrne, who seems intent on usurping her place as Maya Rudolph's best friend, even before the finality of a wedding. But yeah, I mean, because of those things, that movie is so much better than What's Your Number, which sort of just doesn't go any deeper than that. She's looking for these guys because she needs a husband.
I mean, I think they probably would argue, you know, the filmmakers, was that she's kind of more like looking for herself. And I hope I'm not just making this up because I really like Anna Faris and like, I feel like I'm defending her because it's like, which guy can she be herself with, you know, all the time? And I think that's like Chris Evans, but it still is like the search for a partner. I mean, it is what you're saying. I think it's just a slightly different like saying of it.
I think it just fits into that romantic comedy template too neatly. Before she does get in a relationship with him, she has that like fake crisis that all these romantic comedies manufacture in order to take the two people that you're rooting for to get together in order to pull them apart, just so, you know, for 10 minutes or 15 minutes. So there can be like a montage where someone is running to the airport. It's usually an airport.
Yeah.
They make out one night, she and Chris Evans, after their wonderful night of track lighting.
And they don't have sex.
They don't have sex because she's concerned about being
increasing her number.
Yeah, being a really big slut because that'll be 21.
21.
Oh, God. But and even then, at that point, I was like, would 21 really be that? I mean, is that really that much more than 20?
Yeah.
Like, even if you take Marie Claire as gospel, what's the big deal? Why would you give a shit about 21 if, you know?
You're already to 20. I feel like isn't it anything over 20?
I think the article was like, if you have more sexual partners than the number 20, so like if she slept with Chris Evans, then whatever marriage that she was going to have wouldn't work, which is like, oh boy.
I know, right? Like, it's not going to already.
When they woke up in the morning, he had said to her, you know, well, why don't you come over? We can watch all these television programs that I have on my TiVo. It was like Mexican football or something like that, like something really like weird and outrageous.
And ordering food. And whatever.
And she just panicked. It was like that horrible romantic comedy female character thing where they're like, no, this is too good. I must run. It was, you know, the thing that Kristen Wiig does, sort of.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, even though I didn't like that in Bridesmaids, better handled in Bridesmaids.
Those scenes are always like so dumb. It's usually like some miscommunication, some misunderstanding, or like someone, you know, steps over the line of whatever deal they made and they're forced to like not talk to each other. And the audience has to see them do like parallel things and think of each other and blah, blah, blah. This movie, it felt even worse in this movie, just like Friends with Benefits, because they had such like a raunchy rapport that I just was like, ah, get over it already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I felt like they were better friends than anything else. And that they should have just been like, fuck it, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, it always feels so artificial. I want to see a romantic comedy where the two people are together and then the movie ends.
Right.
There's no like false crisis. There's no reason for one of them to have to run, you know, either through an airport or through Chicago at all these different weddings, trying to find out which wedding he's at because she knows he's at a wedding.
Yeah,
and she has to
really
tell him
silly.
At that moment that she loves him. That was, you know, I mean, it did have a pretty good Chris Pratt line reading in it. But, you know, it's just one of those things where I was like, God, just let's get on with this.
Right.
And even the thing with her job in Bridesmaids, that really serves a purpose to show you like how low Kristen Wiig feels about herself. And in this movie, Anna Faris loses her job in the beginning, and then she's still spending, you know, she's got a great apartment in Chicago. She's spending an extravagant amount of money to fly around all over the country.
She flies to Miami.
Yes.
Yeah.
That last scene I do want to bring up. Of course, you know, Anna Faris and Chris Evans are beautiful people, and they have hot bodies, and they end up together. You know, they're sort of laying in bed, and isn't one of the lines like something to the effect of, oh yeah, I guess 21 worked out okay. And then she gets a voicemail from Aziz Ansari in a vocal cameo, who's one of the 20 that she slept with, and he's like, yeah, actually I was just calling to let you know you tried to track me down because we had sex once, but we didn't actually have sex, so I'm just calling to let you know that like just the tip went in, or something like that, right? It was some like really crude phone message. And it ends with her like jumping up on the bed and being like, oh my God, I've only slept with 20 people. Hooray. Like, I'm not a slut after all.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow.
I don't know. I was excited about her number being 21. That's my lucky number. I'm not even joking.
And I would have liked it so much better. I mean, I wouldn't have liked it because I still didn't like this movie, but it would have been so much better of an ending if she had just been like, 21, who really cares?
Exactly.
I'm sitting there thinking that she and Chris Evans, I give it like 3 months, 3-4 months.
Yeah.
Before they break up anyway. So she's obviously going to be moving on to other people. So it would have been like at least a cooler ending if she had been like, hey, you know, what did I learn from this? That who really gives a shit about what's my number? But no.
It would have been better if she was like, all right, so you're not 21, you're 20. Do you have two friends? Let's get to 22. You know?
And then Chris Hemsworth and Justin Timberlake walk in the room.
wait, hold on. I'm writing this down.
So I'm not going to ask you, like I said, I'm not going to ask you what's your number, but I am going to ask you what's your letter grade.
That was good.
That was horrible.
Really good, actually.
Yeah.
I like how you said that. I'd probably give this like a B minus.
I'm going way lower. This might be our biggest gulf yet, but I'm going D plus with this.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, to be completely honest, I feel like if I had lady parts, I would have probably disliked this movie even more than I do already. But I don't have lady parts, by the way. So basically, here's what everyone's takeaway from this scoring cast is. It's not that we can disagree about a movie and be civil and friendly about it. It's that I, Popscorn Jasper, totally have a penis. Maybe. And thanks for listening to another episode of Scorncast. Remember, you can visit PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com, comment on our posts, or give them a +1 if you have no comments to make. And you can email PopScorn at scornpop@gmail.com. And if you really must know, my number is pi. I'll let you use your imaginations to figure out exactly what counts as the 0.14159265358979.